Hilliard Lyons is proud to become a part of Baird, a trusted financial services firm that shares our commitment to the community. I'm Jeff Main, branch manager with Hilliard Lyons. You can learn more about Baird and our new partnership at HilliardToBaird.com.
We'll just keep on trucking along. Contact tracing you mentioned, we don't have a ton of cases. Can we do more contact tracing? Because I know that's what the health department does. Do they just not have enough people? Is that where we're at right now?
Well, I really don't know the actual full answer to that. It's obviously a resource and a training element to start with. You have to train people, and then you have to go follow the protocol of tracing. And I wouldn't be the expert to explain that. I'd ask that you talk to Penny Cuddle and others that are the experts, Dr. Sharp with the health department, to make sure we get that information out there correctly. So I'll defer to them.
All right, sounds good. As we move forward, we know that the new farmers market is happening Tuesdays now at Switchyard Park. What's been your feedback from hearing back from those folks? They had a perfect day, 78 degrees, when we talked to Mayor Hamilton on Tuesday. What has been the feedback from the Tuesday's market moving down there?
Well, very, very good feedback. Obviously, there's not as many vendors and never have been on Tuesday versus Saturday. It is important to note that the Tuesday market does not require pre-ordering. You may just walk up and go as if it were a normal farmer's market. The Saturday market still has the hybrid version. The pre-orders are certainly encouraged, and you can still walk up. And obviously, we manage the number of people in the market space at a time for physical distancing reasons. And we've seen the last two Saturday markets go over 1,000 participants between pre-orders and the walk-up crowd. So that's great. We're seeing more use of the farmers market on Saturday. I don't have the count for Tuesday, but I know from a report from the parks people, they felt very good about the first opening. And they said that the advantage of Switchyard Park, and I do want to mention that too, it's very near completion. Just some of the last remnant pieces of it are being completed, and hopefully June 30th, we'll have the splash pad open for public use. And then very shortly after that, the park kind of is officially done. And when it's done, short of some punch list things that just in use will show that there's some malfunctioning that the contractor will be responsible for quite some time. We anticipate a larger grand opening sometime later this summer or fall. We're going to kind of be careful again about large group gatherings before we're real sure about how the safety of that can be accomplished. But I think it's really great to say that Switchyard Park is nearing completion. Of course, we've seen tremendous use of it ever since it technically opened in November. The pavilion opened, the court surfaces have been open, the garden area has been opened, and now with the sod being laid, you can really get a sense for the finished product and the large open spaces that it can be used for dog parks and for any kind of outdoor recreation you would do in a large grassy area. So that's a long way of saying the additional traffic at the Switchyard Park property has been very beneficial to the Tuesday market, because a lot of people see it's going on outside in the platform area near the pavilion.
How long till the eastern entrance, well, I guess it could be either one, opens up fully? It looks like they're busting it trying to get that done here in the summertime.
Yeah, that's right. That is kind of the last point. So when you build on a site like this one, long and linear, a mile and two-tenths long, very narrow in some spaces, you have to work your way from the middle parts outside to the peripheral parts. And the last part of that is the eastern entrance. So they're literally backing out, kind of like you would if you were laying a wood floor. Carpeting, for that matter, you're going to back your way out the door. The eastern entrance becomes that door.
So no, that'll be no wonder why I screwed that up so many times.
Yeah, if you're laying the other way, you lay yourself into what you can do. So so that is the plan, and that they are working very feverishly. The goal, again, is to try to get it all done with short of the punch list things by June 30th.
Keith, we have breaking news here on a Thursday afternoon.
What's that?
The internet, well, I'm not going to name names, has alerted me that today is Deputy Renheisen's birthday. Deputy Mayor's birthday, so we must pass on happy birthday, Mick.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, that's good. That information was good. I went with it blindly. I was just I wouldn't think anybody, someone would reach out and tell me that if it was not true.
I hope they didn't reveal my age.
No, and I went to your Facebook page to check because we're friends, and you usually listed to the people's birthdays, and you were not on there, so you have hidden that from the public eye very smartly. So that was going to be my confirmation of source, but you are not one of my four friends that has a birthday on this day, so that you would be friend number five. Very busy, June 25th.
Well, former Mayor Kuzan used to tease me on my birthday every year. If he found an opportunity to publicly say that I was an age, he would add 5 years to my real age. So,
well, we have to have a little.
She got great delight out of it. If anybody remembers Mark Kuzan, he definitely had a great sense of humor when he was mayor, or for that matter, when he's not been the mayor, he's got a great sense of humor.
It does turn it on. Well, happy birthday. Do you have any big plans to celebrate?
I'm going to play 9 holes of golf with a friend who's been on the disabled list for a while that wanted to get out. So after the show, sometime later this evening, we're going to get out and play 9 holes together.
Well, it's perfect. You should get out and enjoy it. Speaking of golf, let's just keep that tangent going. Everybody had to be signed up yesterday for the city championship, correct?
That is correct, for the championship flight.
But now everybody can also post their scores through, I believe, 4th of July, Saturday. So that's for the other flights. So please get out and do that. We've Chris Williams tells me 92 years and counting, the city golf tournament here in Bloomington. So if you're not in the championship flight, which most of us aren't, you still have plenty of time to get involved to do so. And it's great because no fee for juniors, and there's all kinds of divisions and flights to participate in.
Chris is the historian for the city golf tournament. He's done a great job of documenting a lot of the historical reference points, and he would be the first to tell you, but I will because I'm on the show and he's not, that the city's match play tournament is the oldest match play tournament in the state of Indiana.
That's fantastic. The oldest in the state.
Wow.
Very nice. Very nice. All right, now back to business, because we do have to have some business in here, and I'm going to stretch this out to stay away from my friend Celeste as long as possible. We saw that Fee Lane is going to get some facelifting done. Who now is that? You, the who's in charge of everybody working together there? How does that work? And when is that project going to get started?
That is the university's project. They're okay. Adding some side paths. Our terminology for that, just a wider pedestrian access sidewalk to the area, which is much needed. If you think about the location of the athletic complex there, the pool, the outdoor pool, the soccer venue, track, football, basketball, wrestling, all those, volleyball, all those facilities, and a lot of students walk into those areas. This is going to give those folks and really any pedestrians in our community much safer access routes to get there on foot. And that started there. I think their project is supposed to be done, as almost every other summer project, before the students return, so particularly before move-in week, which I understand is the week of August 15th.
Mick, let me ask you a question about how things happen. A lot of people are looking around now, and they see the stories about various states went into a different stage, and then young people gathered someplace. They didn't all have masks on. What's the city's plan when all of the students come back, if you see any kind of a spike or anything that looks like it shouldn't look? And I don't know if even you want to go into that, but I know you guys have got to be talking about those kinds of things.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Keith. That is a great concern of ours for a number of reasons. And I think it is for a lot of people. So the groups that regularly meet and discuss this, the university, the IU Health folks, county health department, county commissioners, city and city council. We're all concerned that when we bring back a big economic driver of our community, the student base, they're coming from all over the world, for one thing. They will have very strict regulations about how they interact on campus. But I think it's well known that most of the student population lives off campus, and how they behave when they're not in classes affects everyone else. So we hope that they will be really responsible adult citizens, but we also predict that there will be some that won't. There'll always be a percentage of people. And it's not just students. It can be any of us that are just going to decide that we're going to take a risk on a certain time. Oh, I'm fine. I feel fine. I don't think this is, you know, that big of a deal, whatever the reasons that people might think. And it's those people that are going to get us all in trouble, because the spread rate if there happens to be a resurgence in the fall, which is by many experts' opinions likely to happen, you know, we will have all the catalysts in the world for that to happen here because of the infusing 40,000 people from all over. So we're very sensitive to that. We're going to be very carefully monitoring it with all those entities together. And hopefully, you know, best we can, I think, really do is do a lot of information sharing about the risk. No one in the community or the university wants to see a surge. If that happens, the impacts are dramatic and not good for anybody, not for the health and safety of our community, but even worse, it's a magnitude of disaster for the economy. The right. students have to go home again, then all of the things that they bring in terms of economic benefit to our community go away. All the visitor traffic, all the athletic and arts and culture events, all that stuff grinds to a halt again, if it even starts back. There's a lot of unknowns about that yet. And so that would just be devastating for all the reasons I've stated and more I probably haven't even thought of. So yes, the conversations with those parties, particularly our university counterparts at the time, are ongoing, and actually am part of a group called the Big Ten City Managers Group. I think we actually talked about this last year. All of our communities, all 14 of us, are talking about this, and we have a call. We're either going to have it July 8th, 9th, or 10th. We're going to spend a half a day talking about what others are doing in their respective communities that we can learn from and share with each other. What can we do? Because we all have those similar conditions. Although I will say Bloomington is unique in this regard. No other community in the Big Ten has the percentage of its population as high as we do for students. We are just about 50-50 here. Every other community, it's a much smaller percentage of the overall population. In other words, the impacts here could be way more dramatic.
Let me ask you this then. We understand that the governor can put certain restrictions in. Apparently the county health department can. Realistically, what can the city do if there would be a spike? Can you close businesses? Can you close Indiana Avenue and say, all you students stay on that side of that
line? That's a health commissioner. That's right. The health people.
Well,
that's the
it really is. It's going to require the participation of a lot of other entities. We do not have the authority to do many of those things,
okay.
Keith. We would rely on the county health department. They have the jurisdiction and the authority to do some things that are in the best interest of public health. Could we declare some sort of a city emergency? I think that we have the power to do it. What that looks like and what the exact impact of that is and the enforcement, which is always the challenge. And I say that with all due respect to everyone else trying to figure these things out as we go through this pandemic together, is we can't put somebody in every bar, restaurant, business, physical location of people gathering and stand there and monitor behavior. There's not enough of us in any setting to watch people's behavior. We have to ask people to do the right thing and hope that the majority, way more than the majority, ideally, you know, 99.9% will do the right thing. Wear a mask, stay physically distanced, continue to practice good hygiene. Those three things have proven to be successful. And when we've watched large gatherings in other states, what have we noticed right away that happens when they don't do those things? The surge comes back. So we're getting living proof those things work, but if you don't do them, then what? We should all expect the outcome to be a resurgence in the virus spread.
Yeah, we can talk about it until we're blue in the face. It's a behavior issue that has to behave. Speaking of new behaviors, how about your Bollards last weekend? How did they work out? I went down there. Everything looked great.
Well, I think, you know, again, I want to credit the Kirkwood Merchants Association for, you know, being flexible and bringing the idea to us. I want to credit our people and the city council for reacting quickly to try to figure out a way to help. That's good governance. That's the way things should work when you see a problem and you can meet the challenge and you work with your community partner. So, you know, they evaluated it. They did some surveys. I think they're watching the weather forecast for this weekend. I'm not sure if they ask us to go back and do it again. We've learned how to put the bollards in day one and take them out in day three. We'll learn how to do that a little quicker, so there's not a whole lot of staff time and expense associated with that. But as far as practically how did it work, I feel very good about both the people who were participants downtown eating out, the restaurants that did it, the retail merchants that did it, and our staff that had to perform some of those duties. I thought it was a really good pilot trial run. It could go on through the end of September on weekends. we'll rely on the merchants to tell us, you know, when, what weekends they want to do it.
Well, so it's up to them. All right. I understand.
Right. When the city is not the arbiter or decision maker about when it happens and when it does. We couldn't force the businesses to participate to begin with.
Sure.
If they, they think it's working for them, all they have to do is let us know, I think, by Wednesday, end of day, and then we'll put the bollards back in for the Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Mick, you told us last week that you didn't know how long it would take to put them in, take them out, what kind of equipment you needed. Have you learned some of those things at this point?
We did. We learned a lot. There's a keying device that you have to take a sleeve out of the ground so that the bollard can be inserted where the sleeve was in before. And some of the grit and grime of the construction process made that a little hard. So I heard from Adam Wason, who you guys talked to as well. He said, we're going to buy a shop vac for next week, an industrial size shop vac to suck out all that debris to make the keys turn a little easier. Because there's 103 bollards. If we were to use all of them, they didn't need to use all of them for that particular setup. But, you know, it could take a while to put that many bollards in, particularly if the keys get stuck.
They look sharp. They look sharp.
And the staff on the ground, they told me some stories about how they learned how not to damage the bollards by using a device that started to leave marks on those yellow bollards. So, yeah, it was a learning process, but all in all, they figured it out pretty quickly.
And it looks good. You don't feel fenced in or barricaded in. It's just a natural separation of the foot and pedestrian and bike traffic from the car traffic. So very good. Kudos.
I'm glad you said
around.
That. I think the aesthetics matter.
They do matter, yes.
The feeling and the sense of place matters, and those do the job without feeling like you have this huge security barrier presence, like the orange barriers or they call the Jersey barriers, the big concrete structures that you have to put into place. So, yeah, I'm glad you said that. I think that's right. That's what they're designed for.
Yeah, it feels like they should be there, and they're part of the natural landscape as opposed to look out, caution, stay out, get away. And that's a good change. It's a positive change. I wish we had better weather to help out with, but that's why hopefully we'll extend this into September when we can see, well, and sometimes in September, Keith, we get all four seasons in 2 days.
That's right. Yes.
That's true.
Mick Renneisen's our guest, the birthday boy, the deputy mayor, checking in from the city of Bloomington as we roll on here on a Thursday afternoon. Any other big ticket items I'm missing, Mick?
I don't think there are. We talked a little bit about our meeting last week on the hospital reuse project. That went well with over 200 participants. We're tentatively targeting August 6th for the next public forum. We're still trying to debate whether some of that can be in person and some electronic. So we talked to our planning team yesterday about that. More to come, of course. Just a reminder for folks interested in the project, you can go on our website, bloomingtonhospitalsite.com, at any time and see what information is already there, including what we did at the forum, with new information populating the site as it becomes available. So please go to that site. It's going to give you a lot of information. And then again, we'll have some early sketches of what our architects or our master planning firm, I should say. They're not architects. They have one on staff, but the goal is not to design buildings that will be built, rather a master plan for what eventually developers will build, and then the architectural planning part will come at that phase of the project years down the road. That's not what this is. So anyway, after we get those initial sketches of what might go there, we want the community to tell us, hey, maybe too much of that and more of this would be needed, and that'll be part of the next couple of public forums that we'll talk about on future shows.
Mick, on that topic, last week you had just gotten the bids on the 4th Street. What do you know about the bid process?
Very good. Thank you for bringing that up. Those are two major projects that are going on. 4th Street, we have two bid packages. One's the piers, sort of the structural things that hold up the decks, the floors, if you will, of the garage. And then the balance of the bidding was all about the rest of the structure. And they came in at what we expected. The team from Wilhelm, that's actually our construction manager, is looking through all those, and they should be going to the Redevelopment Commission with a plan for the lowest, most responsive bid packages on July 6th. And then you might actually see next week, or I should say after July 6th, that week, you'll see a lane closure on Walnut Street again as that site becomes a construction site later in July.
So we're caught up and ready to go.
District Garage, you should... if you have not looked at that, and we're about to put cameras up in real time that you can look at the construction of both garages. Those are being manufactured, should be here shortly. And then we'll have a website link. We'll talk about that on the show when we have that website link. So you can literally watch time-lapse footage come out of those two structures, come out of the ground. The Trades District garage, floor one's done. So it's already starting to happen. They poured it, started early this morning, and it's done, but it's under construction at a floor level already. The basement's been poured and all the piers are up.
Wow.
Progress mm-hmm. and progress. So that's the good news as well. All right, Mick, let me.
Yeah, speaking of progress.
Get my crayon out.
Regression is what's going to happen now.
I think one of the two of you was 1 for 3 last week. Does that sound about right?
Probably Keith.
Yeah, right.
I think it was Keith. Yeah, I think our other member of our team was 0 for 3. So
I was.
Had some making up to do this week.
And I'm ready.
All right. On this day in 1896, Booker T. Washington became the first Black American to receive an honorary Master of Arts degree from Harvard. This week's trivia is dedicated to one of America's great educators. So, question number one, which historically Black college or university did Washington lead for more than 30 years? Was it Morehouse College, Florida A&M, Tuskegee, or Spelman?
Boy, I'm going to, the one I'd like to pick would be Tuskegee, but I'm going to say Morehouse.
I think Morehouse is right as well.
Oh, Keith, you outsmarted yourself. It is Tuskegee University.
Oh, the Airmen?
Yes.
Ah. He began leading that school in 1881 and continued well into the 20th century.
1881.
30 years he led Tuskegee University. Hmm. All right. One of you outguessed yourself that time. Question number two, which president invited Booker T. Washington to dinner, later denying that the dinner had ever happened? Was it William Howard Taft, William McKinley, Grover Cleveland, or Teddy Roosevelt?
Well, Keith, I am as stumped as stump gets. Let's see, Taft. You know, he had plenty of dinners in his time.
He had the bathtub issue.
Couldn't get out of it.
That's right.
McKinley,
he would have eaten him.
McKinley was assassinated. Yeah. Grover Cleveland. That's a bad run of presidents there.
I'm going with Teddy.
Yeah, I'm going to go Teddy as well.
It is Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah, I finally got one right. He denied it later?
Yeah. Although the dinner was later denied, photographs are still available showing the two had met together.
That's probably
not very funny in the big picture of things, but
no. But when there's a picture around and you're still denying it,
Gee, video that you deny ever happened? Wow!
Imagine that in the era of Facebook and Twitter and TikTok. Now you couldn't you'd be a fool to deny that. Although that does still happen.
Yes,
and that's kind of where I was going, Mick. But I'm going to leave it there. It's a Thursday afternoon, Celeste. We're halfway home. Well, we're 2/3 of the way home, but we're halfway right. That's the good news.
There you go. Question number three: what is the name of Washington's autobiography, which is considered a classic of American literature? Is it Up from Slavery, Character Building, The Man Farthest Down, or Putting the Most into Life?
What was the first one again?
Up from Slavery, Character Building, The Man Farthest Down, or Putting the Most into Life?
I'm going with Putting the Most into Life.
I'm going with C. I'm learning again. This is the third week in a row we've learned from Celeste. At least I have.
So C for Glass and the audience is The Man Farthest Down. D was Putting the Most into Life, and the answer is A, Up from Slavery.
Jeez.
Well, and actually, just so people know, Washington actually wrote two autobiographies, but was unhappy with the first one. And that unhappiness led him to author the second one, which was called Up from Slavery.
Well, it's the first one I was right on. That was the name of that one.
That was not the name of the first one.
That was not the name.
good effort at that, though.
We try. We try and we try. Well, good. Celeste is learning us, and we hope our listeners are learning as well. And
Were any of the choices on this one C, Mick? Because he guessed.
Yes, Tuskegee University.
Oh,
went on three and we missed it. This week.
You went the wrong way. All right, great job, birthday boy. Get out of here. Go play golf.
Thanks, guys. Have a good week.
We'll talk to you next Thursday before the 4th of July holiday and get everything ready to go for, well, if the doors are going to open, or we'll see what the plan is. Each week is a little bit different, Mick. So, Mick, can we borrow you next Thursday as well?
Absolutely.
Great, my friend. Thank you. Happy birthday.
Thanks, guys.
Mick Renhuizen, the deputy mayor of the city of Bloomington and birthday boy and trivia thrasher of us. He joins us every Thursday just after 4:05, and we always get a full tilt with him.